Hi, this is Captain Frank from the Maryland School of Sailing and Seamanship. This evening we're going to talk about some basics of the automated information system. I'd like to start out by saying that in the ninth edition of Farwell's Rules of the Nautical Road, the authors, Craig Allen Sr. and Jr., open Chapter 8, which is entitled Action to Avoid Collision, with the following statement. A recurring problem confronting the mariner in selecting the appropriate collision avoidance action is the absence of mutual cognition, understanding the conduct required of not only the mariner's own vessel, but of the other vessel as well. A coordinated system for collision avoidance requires three elements. Each approaching vessel must mutually perceive, one, the risk of collision, two, the course of action to be taken to avoid collision, and three, the point in distance and or time at which maneuvers must be made. So in November of 2018, a Norwegian Navy frigate collided with an oil tanker near Bergen, Norway. It was a clear night. The area was under control of the local vessel traffic scheme, and the watch on the frigate was fully manned. The frigate was traveling south at about 18 knots. About an hour after the frigate entered the VTS area, an oil tanker was leaving a loading terminal and preparing to head north. The VTS controllers assumed that each vessel was aware of the other and would work out the passing arrangements. The tankers saw the frigate moving toward them, but assumed that the frigate could see them and maneuver appropriately. Unfortunately, while the officer of the watch and two other crew members did see the oil tanker, they assumed it was still tied up and not moving, so they held their course. This resulted in the oil tanker hitting the frigate just after the starboard beam and continuing down its starboard side, causing water ingress, some minor injuries, and some other damage. Now, part of the problem was the crew of the frigate was inexperienced, and both the VTS operator and the crew of the oil tanker made some bad assumptions about what the frigate would do. But as I said, it was a clear night, and both vessels were visible to each other by visual and radar observation. The problem with visual and radar observations is they take time to work. Seeing another vessel initially doesn't tell you whether it's moving or not. You have to watch it over a period of time to see what it's doing. If only the two vessels had an automated identification system, then they could have instantaneously known what the situation was, right? Wrong. In fact, both vessels were equipped with AIS. However, the frigate, as is often the case with military and law enforcement vessels, was not transmitting. They were only receiving. The oil tanker was transmitting, but the update timing for a moored or anchored vessel is every 3 minutes. Once it started moving, it would have started updating data more frequently, but it was still only updating data every minute or so. For a vessel maneuvering slowly away from a dock, the initial information will be confusing at best. Until the oil tanker was on course and coming up to speed, the AIS information would not have been particularly useful, even if the frigate's crew had been watching it. The U.S. Coast Guard has been keeping track of collisions for centuries, and one of the newest categories that they're using is called electronically assisted collisions. These used to be called radar-assisted collisions, but over the past few decades, as GPS and AIS systems have become more prevalent, the term was expanded to include these as well as other electronic aids to boat handling. So what is AIS? How does it work? How much should you trust it? Unfortunately, as with all things in boating, the answer to the last question is, it depends. To evaluate that, we need to answer the first two. Now, AIS stands for Automatic Identification System. It's a collection of electronic sensors and data transceivers that allows your boat to communicate with other boats in the local area in order to exchange information, hopefully allowing you to make better judgments. It started, as so many things in the electronic world do, with a problem in the aviation world during World War II. When planes were flying at high speed and encountered another plane, it became very important to determine if the other plane was going to shoot at you. In order to help pilots make that decision, a system called IFF, which stood for Identification, Friend or Foe, started being installed in first ground stations and ships,
and then in individual airplanes. Basically, the system sent out a signal and then listened for the appropriate response from the other plane. If it got the correct response, the pilot knew that the other plane was friendly. If there was no response, for whatever reason, then the other plane was fair game. After the war, the system became more sophisticated and could provide far more information. In the 1980s, civilian versions of the system were released, allowing airplanes to provide each other with speed, direction, height, and other information to provide assistance in avoiding collisions. The idea spread to the marine world, and in 2002, the International Maritime Organization's Safety of Life at Sea Treaty was updated to require most vessels of 300 gross tons or more engaged in international travel to have AIS capability. These systems were considered Type A systems. In 2006, a simpler system called Type B was approved for recreational vessels. Finally, an intermediate system called Class B/SO or B+ has come on the market. It has some technical advantages over the Class B transceiver, so it allows the recreational boater to have a more robust system at a lower price than the Class A. The three biggest differences between the Class A system and the Class B system are, one, the Class A system is programmed to send far more information about itself than Class B. Two, the Class A and the Class B Plus system have a dedicated schedule for broadcasting its message, where the Class B system simply listens to see if anyone else is broadcasting, and if not, it sends its message. And three, the Class A system has a power output of 12.5 watts, where the Class B system is limited to 2 watts, or 5 watts for the Class B+. Now, for the recreational boater, these are not major differences, except that the reduced power of the Class B system does limit the distance the message can travel. AIS transceivers operate on VHF radio frequencies, and so the original signal was line of sight. You generally had to be in sight of the other vessels, or it was just over the horizon, to receive information about it. In 2009, AIS antennas were added to the International Space Station, and the era of satellite AIS was born. Now, many of the Class A systems can be tracked from space, and that information is relayed to ground-based receivers. While this is interesting, and there is some effort to add tracking of Class B+ units, none of this will relate to collision avoidance. Although it is useful for figuring out what ships were doing what before the collision. So how does AIS help in collision avoidance? Well, to answer that, we need to look at the information AIS units will send. AIS units send what are called messages, which is a data packet consisting of 256 bits, or individual ones and zeros for the computer geeks among us. Because part of the message is taken up with housekeeping information, the actual useful data is only 168 bits. Because of this, the system will usually use multiple messages to send a complete data stream. For example, messages 1, 2, and 3 collectively make up the navigation information for a Class A system, which includes the vessel's maritime mobile security, vessel's maritime mobile service identity number, MMSI, which is a unique 9-digit identification number, its navigation status. For example, it can be at anchor, underway using engines, not under command, etc. Its rate of turn to right or left from 0 to 720 degrees per minute, speed over ground in 0.1 knot resolutions from 0 to 102 knots, not a big problem, positional resolution, longitude and latitude to 0.0001 arc minutes precision. Or really, really good. Course over ground, relative to true north at 0.1 precision. True heading, 0 to 359. For example, from a gyro compass or a flux gate compass. True bearing at its own position, 0 to 359. And UTC seconds. This is the seconds field of the UTC time when these data were generated. A complete timestamp is not present. So in other words, it doesn't tell you all of the information for the time. It just says this happened 30 seconds after the last minute. Now, a Class B system uses message 18 to send similar information. The MMSI, the time, speed over ground, course over ground, longitude, latitude, and true heading. Now, a Class B plus system can send an additional message, number 19, which adds the ship type and dimensions. These messages are sent relatively frequently and are speed dependent. At a minimum, they're sent every 3 minutes, but depending on speed, they can come as rapidly as every 30 seconds for Class B units and every 2 seconds for Class A. In addition to this navigation information, both systems will send a static information message every 6 minutes. So depending on the system, this can be information like the boat's name, ship type, call sign, equipment vendor ID, which always interesting, the ship's length, width, draft, as well as its intended destination for Class A. Now, some of this data is hardwired into the system. Some obviously has to be entered by hand each time the ship gets underway. Now, since a Class B receiver may be getting signals from a Class A transmitter, each system has to be able to identify all of this data and display it. However, in many cases, fields will be blank because the data doesn't exist. For example, RAIM, Receiver Autonomous Integrity Monitoring, is a signal related to how accurate the sending vessel's GPS data is. While it would be great to know whether the position information from that other guy is accurate or not, Class B and Class B plus units simply don't have that information available, and most Class A units don't either, so that field is usually blank. Finally, how do we get to see this data? Now, usually most up-to-date Class B units send the data to a multifunction display, what most of us would refer to as the chart plotter or the GPS. This is the screen on board that shows either a chart or a radar display, and it'll provide a graphic representation of the vessel transmitting AIS information. Once a vessel shows up on the screen, the cursor can be placed upon it and more information can be shown, either on the screen directly or on a separate set of pages. Now, usually there's a way to get all the active AIS signals as well, which can be expanded to show more information about each vessel. On older units, all you'll get is a text display of the active signals on a dedicated screen. Either way, you'll be presented with the location, course over ground, and speed over ground of the vessel at the last time it transmitted, which, as we can see, can be as much as 3 minutes ago. Now, from here on, I'm going to focus on Type B AIS units. In general, Class A units cost about 2 to 5 times what a Class B unit is going to cost, and from the receiver point of view, they aren't going to provide any better functionality. The only other advantage that a Class A unit might have is that they will usually have a dedicated screen on the unit, where Type B units generally need to be connected to a multifunction display. AIS units transmit on VHF radio frequencies, which means that the unit has to have a connection to the antenna. On commercial vessels and bigger recreationals, this usually means a dedicated antenna separate from the ones used by the VHF communication radios. However, on most smaller boats, there's usually only one VHF radio antenna, so there needs to be some way for the system to know which radio is using the antenna at a time. This is accomplished by something called a splitter. A splitter listens to the output signal from the radio and the AIS unit, and whichever one is transmitting, the other one is temporarily disconnected from the antenna. In receive mode, both radios end up listening to the same feed. However, the AIS unit is listening for signals on the old 87B and 88B VHF channels, while those channels are no longer available on VHF radios. Now, the splitter ensures that only one source of data is transmitting at a time, but the length of time of an AIS transmission is minuscule. It's about 3/100ths of a second. Because of this, even when you're transmitting on the VHF radio, the splitter can switch over, send the AIS information, and then switch back without the person you're talking to ever knowing that it happened. Since this is only going to happen every 30 seconds at the fastest, it simply will not be a problem for either radio. However, while you are transmitting on the VHF radio, the AIS unit is unable to listen for any other vessel's AIS transmission. Now, this is going to be important when we talk about collision avoidance. How do we use that information? Well, that's going to depend on what information is available and how it's displayed. Now, obviously, the first thing to look at would be the speed over ground. This would be true whether you have a graphic or text-based display. If the speed over ground is less than 1 knot, then there's a very good chance that the vessel is sitting still. A boat that's anchored will still show a speed or course as it moves with the wind and current. Also, because of variations in the GPS signal, even a boat that's tied to a dock can show an instantaneous speed. This happens because the system shows small changes in the latitude and longitude, and the computer in the AIS system assumes the boat has started moving. If the speed of the other vessel is close to zero, we can put it in the sleeping category, but we still want to check it every 3 minutes or so. After all, even a sleeping dog can wake up and bite you. If, on the other hand, the other vessel shows a speed over ground, the next thing we want to do is determine where it's headed. Even if you have a multifunction display, it's a good idea to quickly scope out which direction the vessel is headed. Remember that with a Class B system transmitting, the only data you may have initially is a latitude, a longitude, a speed, and a course over ground. Using your own latitude and longitude, determine where the other boat is relative to you. For example, if your latitude and longitude are, let's say, 36 degrees 0 north and 76 degrees 0 west, and the other boat is 36 degrees 1 north and 75 degrees 55.9 west, then you would know that it's north and east of you. You could quickly draw this on your chart because, of course, you have a chart open, don't you? So while you're at it, you jot all the relevant information into your logbook so that you'll have it even if something happens to your system. Now, if you have digital selective calling VHF radio, getting the MMSI to the other vessel is one of your most important pieces of information. A DSC-capable radio will allow you to call the other vessel directly and will even send an alert tone and switch the other radio to channel 16, assuming they have a DSC-capable radio as well. Now, take a look at the other boat's course over ground. Now, this value is reported in true, usually, so all you have to do is look at the latitude and longitude lines on your chart, since they run north, south, and east-west in true. If the other vessel is moving away from you, you can again put it in the sleeping category and just keep an eye on it. If not, you're definitely going to want more information. Now that you have a general idea of where the other boat is, where she's headed, and how fast, the next step is to go topside and back up your AIS information with a visual observation. Trusting the information in your multifunction display is the absolute best way to ensure you're going to have a collision. Getting eyes on the other guy is now the most important step in the process. If you can find the other boat, let your other crew members know where it is. You're going to be going back and doing more analysis, and you want to make sure that someone is keeping an eye on the boat while you're doing it. If you can't find the other boat, keep looking. We'll talk a little bit later about false AIS signals, but at this point, you should be assuming the signal is correct. Before we go on, we need to talk about two acronyms that you're going to see on your screen. They are CPA and TCPA. CPA stands for the closest point of approach and is the relative angle to which you and the other boat, it's going to be the relative angle to you that the other boat will be on when it gets as close to you as it will if nothing changes. TCPA is time to the closest point of approach, and it's the number of minutes until you reach the closest point of approach. CPA and TCPA are not transmitted values. They're calculations done by your system based on the speeds and courses of both vessels. A Class B system, between the lower power of the transmitter and the lower height of the antenna, can only transmit between about 2 and 5 nautical miles. So let's assume that a medium-sized sport cruiser just showed up on your AIS. Given the factors I just mentioned, let's say that it showed up 4 miles ahead and traveling at 20 knots straight at you. And again, let's assume you're sailing along at 4 knots. This makes your closing speed 24 knots. This means you're going to meet in only 10 minutes. If it's dark, hazy, rainy, or foggy, you may not be able to see that cruiser until they've traveled a good portion of that 4 miles. So what should we do? Well, the first thing is to remember that the information from the other boat is only going to update about every 30 seconds. You'll get about 20 updates from the point that he shows up on your screen till the time you're filling out the accident report forms. This boat is definitely no longer in the sleeping category. If possible, get someone on that radio. The vessel bridge-to-bridge radio telephone regulations allows vessels to communicate on channel 13 for navigational information, and that may be a good place to start. However, if you don't get a response there, you should fairly quickly switch to channel 16 and initiate your call there with the knowledge that as soon as you get in contact, you're going to change to a working channel. This is one of those places where having the MMSI number will help. The other vessel's name is not going to show up on your gear until the static information message is sent, and that could be as long as 3 minutes. 3 minutes would be a very long time to look down the barrel of that other boat. So getting an MMSI call out as soon as possible is very helpful. Of course, it may take a while to dial the MMSI number into your radio, particularly if your boat is moving around a lot. So this is one of those skills you should be practicing when you can, rather than waiting until you need it. However, now we have to remember that the problem with transmitting on the VHF radio, when you're transmitting, you're not receiving. So the possibility exists that you could be trying to call the other boat at exactly the milliseconds that his AIS is transmitting. Generally speaking, your AIS system will continue to show the other vessel, even though it hasn't gotten updated, until the system misses several check-ins. The system will not change the position or speed information about the other vessel. It doesn't continue the plot, so to speak. It will, however, change the position relative to you since it knows that you're still moving. Often, this results in a Class B target jumping around the screen every 30 seconds or so as the other vessel maneuvers. While you're trying to contact the other vessel on the radio, you're going to want to try to work out the plot of the other vessel so you can determine appropriate action. On most screens, the AIS is going to give you the speed, course, CPA, and TCPA information. So that'll give you a starting point. However, this does not tell you what you should do to avoid a collision. AIS, it can only tell you what the other vessels are doing right now, not what they will do, nor what you should do. So let's take a stop at this point, and we'll talk next time about more information about the AIS and what you should do in this situation. Again, this is Captain Frank Mumbert with the Maryland School of Sailing and Seamanship, and we look forward to seeing you at the school. Thanks, and good night.